Welcome to The Ether. Today is Sunday, April 10th, 2022. This episode of The Ether is brought to you by Intern Capital. Everyone knows interns make the world go round, so when it comes to picking out your interns, make sure you choose the best. The best you say, that's right, the best. And everyone knows all the best interns come from Intern Capital. Be sure to follow Intern Capital on Twitter and keep an eye out April 14th for the Intern FT Mint launching on One Planet. Links are in the show notes. And for more information, check out intern.capital. Be sure to follow Intern Capital on Twitter for daily ship posts and stock tips. This episode of The Ether is also brought to you by Talus. Talus Protocol is the NFT platform for independent artists on Terra. Talus helps to provide artists with the tools and resources needed to transition from traditional art into the NFT world. With their V1 launch coming soon, Talus will be the place to see real-world art reflected on Terra. Be sure to join their Telegram and follow Talus on Twitter for updates on their roadmap, validator, and other Talus news. Find your next favorite artist on talus.art. TerraSpaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. Today on The Ether, the Lavanna Lore Quiz and AMA. Let's take a listen.
All right, well, we're excited to have this late night AMA. We've got a lot of really cool information that we're going to be sharing. We're going to be taking a bunch of questions. We've got some great articles that are going to be coming up that are going to be outlining the path from today to Lavanna's launch. We've got the beta of perps on testnet, which I hope all of you took some time to play with. We're going to be talking about the trading contest around the perps. We're going to be talking about the faction war games what's been going on there with Malice Chasma, and a little bit about the token distribution and what it's going to take for you to participate in the token generation event for Lavanna. So very excited to have everybody. Beach, thanks for joining us. And where do you want to get started with the conversation?
So I think let's go back to the original questions that were asked that some people missed in the AMA from yesterday with regards to the lore. There were some great questions there. Also questions about the tokenomics and also questions about the NFTs. So I'm just going to go back to the spreadsheet of all the questions that were asked. And I'm going to hang out in the general channel and also in the live AMA question channel in case people have questions that they want to post on the Discord that they didn't see us answering. So one of the questions that we get all the time is about wallet security and whether or not people can or should move all of their assets out of their existing Terra wallet. So unfortunately, or fortunately, the entire allocation right now for the Faction Wars is based on your wallet address. So until the Faction Wars are over and things are moved, your accomplishments are moved onto your stake talismans, it is not advisable to move anything out of your wallet. Now, that being said, if your wallet is compromised or you're very nervous, you can obviously, you know, move everything and unstake your talisman, or you can leave your stake talisman and move everything. What you'll lose is spirit level and dragon count, meteor cracking, egg nesting points from your existing wallet. So, and those are things that do give points, but if you're nervous about it, then definitely, you know, take security hygiene seriously. And as we've all learned from members of our community that have been hacked and lost assets in the last little bit, security hygiene is no joke, and you should definitely take your Terra assets and your Lavanna assets seriously. And with all wallets, you know, practice good security hygiene. Never share your seed phrase with anyone. we'll never ask for your seed phrase. You should never give it to us.
In general, if you, the general rule of thumb, and this is what we tell to people on the team, and something that I've been saying for, I guess, the last 5 or 6 years, it actually happened to me once in early 2017. If you ever find yourself typing your seed phrase into a computer, it means you're about to get hacked. One way or another, I would say 90% of the time where I've encountered anybody in my social circle that has lost funds, it all traces back to a time when they typed their seed phrase into a computer. So that could be migrating a wallet from one place to another. That could be that they are talking to some support desk. We even had an interesting story with somebody that is part of the Lavana that is that manages the finance, and so he was struggling to get a multi-sig wallet to connect to Anchor. So actually, if there's anybody on the call that's succeeded in that before, please DM our Twitter handle with more information. And so he went into Discord, spent about an hour or so talking to support, and then was brought to a very official looking Anchor multi-sig website that looked very clean and crisp and everything. And on step 4 or 5, he was asked to put in the seed phrase. And so then he came to one of our engineers and said, oh, you know, which of the seed phrases from the multi-sig should I put in? And then that's where the alarms went off. And so the amount of robustness that goes into nefarious actors in this space is ridiculous. So again, if you are ever find yourself in a situation where somebody's asking to put your seed phrase into a computer to type it out, you're about to get your funds stolen. I'm not sure why we started with that, but that's always a good reminder.
I think maybe because it's the most painful reminder that we need to give people. So let's get the bad out of the way. You know, if you ever ask me, like, would you like the good news or the bad news? I'm like, just give me the bad news and then I can focus on the good news. So that's why we started with that. So we had some other questions from the last AMA, which I want to address. People were asking if they'll be able to see their full dragon during the genetic modifications or the customization process so that... I think folks were envisioning like some kind of virtual, you know, dragon skin trying on mechanism. And the answer is sort of a yes and no, meaning you'll be able to see each of the genetic modifications. You won't be able to see it on your actual dragon. So because we've done so many possible genetic modifications, and by that, I mean, you know, there's 17 different eye colors. There's 136 different dragon skins, essentially. There are 22 types of horns. We won't be able to show and display each of those variations and then build your virtual dragon for you on the fly. So you will have to do a little bit of imagining. You know, we'll do our best to make it the most complete experience possible, but it won't be possible to see everything all at once. So I do want to set some expectations there. You know, had we done one dragon body and 20 colors and, you know, two horns and two eye colors, that probably would have, you know, and thrown some sunglasses and a hat, that probably would have been possible. But just the way that we're doing it and the complex way that we've added, it's not possible. So I apologize for that. The last question that I want to hit in terms of the NFTs, Jonathan, before I'll let you talk about tokenomics a little bit and the lore, is people were asking about the three body types and, you know, what they are. So we have shown in the Danko video and before that we have three dragon body types, and those will be, again, customizations that you'll be able to make. So it's either an Eastern dragon, a Western dragon, or a Wyvern dragon. And so you'll be able to choose your dragon type as part of the customization process, which is, I think, pretty exciting. You know, when I was hinting before about it being an essential kind of choice, so the capabilities and the feature set of your dragon is obviously going to be something that you get to choose. So that's pretty epic, I think, and fundamental. And that's really exciting. If you haven't seen yet, you know, what those dragons look like, you can come back to the general channel on the Discord and see some of the pictures from the sneak peeks. And with that, Jonathan, I'm going to turn it back over to you so you can answer some of the lore questions or the tokenomics questions that are currently
we have the questions from last night, so I'll just start with those, and then you can ping me with other where I should look for other questions. So perfect. We have so this was a question from the Elf King. When will the first book be released? So we are up to chapter 12 of a first round of edit, and the goal is to be 30 chapters long. So this is roughly the first act. It ended up being of like a three act story arc. So this is where we're actually we're actually simultaneously working on the graphic novel and the book. So we have the prologue, we have a side story of the graphic novel, and now we're working on chapter one of the graphic novel. I suspect that by the end of July we will have all of the written words written and edited. And then it will go through a round of polish. The graphic novel is obviously slower than writing the book. And then we need to make a decision as to whether or not we want to work on the second and third book before publishing the first book. But I think that the sentiment right now, which is subject to change, is that we'll be publishing in the fall, please God, the first book as an NFT. And it will... obviously we don't know what anybody else is working on between now and then, but it should be the first NFT full length young adult science fiction fantasy novel, meaning the type of book that you'd see at the airport as you're catching your flight, and in terms of length and content. And it's right now with the first 11 chapters actually is what I printed out and have been shilling around my neighborhood to all of the high school and college kids. And the feedback that I've gotten from it has been just overwhelmingly positive. Like it's an interesting story. It's got great characters. They're believable. They have they have flaws. They go through emotional challenges, and the world is a rich world that we've put a lot of effort into creating. So what type of tools will each faction be using? The factions each have very specific building or generating or making capabilities. So those are all reflected. The Terrans are mostly working with recycled material. The Council has very advanced making capabilities, which is similar to alchemy, if you're familiar with Full Metal Alchemist. So they can duplicate at a very fine level advanced technology. From essentially copying it from one instance to another or repairing it. And that's part of kind of the harvesting of children from the Terrans in order to make sure that there's always enough makers. The Guardians don't really make much. They have a huge cache of supplies, as most war machines do, so that they can work independently and are not suffering from challenges around supply chain management. And then the Free Martians have really learned how to live independently and sustainably off of the natural resources found on Mars's surface and below Mars's surface. And I don't want to spoil too much, but we'll get into, the book will uncover some of the details of their life. And if you've read Dune, so we're very much inspired by that. The Fremen and the Free Martian have a lot of overlap conceptually, and just getting into how Herbert, the author of Dune, really articulated what it was like to be a Fremen and to live on planet Arrakis. So that's a lot of the inspiration that we have for Mars. So, will there be specific towns for each factions? There are specific towns for each faction. The Free Martians are more nomadic, but they do have permanent settlements. And then there are specific large cities that come up reoccurringly, both in the lore that we've released today, and then also in the story itself. you know, a lot of those towns are towns based off of towns in human history. And so you might recognize the name, or if you don't recognize the name, it would be fun to Google them to understand the reference. Okay, are there going to be weapons airdropped for each faction? So no, actually the mechanics in the game is that land is going to be a working resource. So if you've ever played Settlers of Catan, then you'll understand that mechanic at a high level. So that means that if you are a landowner of a specific plot, then you can invest in factories that are then created on top of it. And then those factories can then produce. And so that's where the majority of, let's say it, of item inflation will come from. And dust will play a role in that you'll be able to use dust as a material in order to be able to create different types of items. Okay, we have next question is from Zachary. Is there a backstory on how the logos were determined? I instantly saw the shield and flower. And what about the council logo? And did the Free Martians split only after discovering dragons? Hence the dragon and theirs. So you guys are not going to leave anything for spoilers. Okay, so yes, there is a backstory. There are hidden images in each of the logos of the four factions. The shield and the flower, for the guardians and the Terrans. The council logo is the all-seeing eye. So that's inspired from Sauron from Lord of the Rings. And then the Free Martians, it actually goes back to that the evidence of dragons on Mars is a much debated historical occurrence, because the council has controlled the narrative of history for the last 400 years. So it's very hard to tell exactly what is the true history of Mars. But if you ask some of the historians that have kind of been outcast, or archaeologists, they will tell you about how there's been uncovering of the evidence of dragons since the first colony to Mars. So it is a debated question, and it's something that you'll have to read the book to figure out. Were all the people on Mars free during the initial arrival of people? Did they come as part of the company with a hierarchy, similar to the East Indian companies, or was it like the Mayflower and all equally seeking refuge? So I'm not going to explain that, because that's a plot element. But the history of Mars was similar to how you would imagine that the history of Mars would start in the real world. Is that it's going to start with some type of a government sponsored scientific exploration, probably subsidized by the private sector through, billionaires with an itch to scratch. And then over time, it will be opened up for scientific research, and then for industrial production, meaning if we find resources on Mars that actually are worth the money of going there and then coming back. And then eventually there will be a tourist industry. So it's, from the Terrans that we have today, just to give a spoiler, they're the descendants of the tourists. So I guess that does mean that, I guess I am answering it, that there was some type of class hierarchy. Why in the description does it seem like only the council truly respects the dragons for their power? Everyone else sees something for personal gain by manipulating the dragons. Council just grows their power by associating with the dragons and not enslaving them. Well, that seems like a loaded question from a council member. So I'm going to address it slightly differently, is that the council are the only ones that have the true story as to the dragons. So that might impact where their fear and awe comes from them. Okay, next set of questions. Janice Terra Moondigger. I want to ask about the Arak and the Free Martian logo on top of them. Is that council play, or is it just a Free Martian companion? As we know, Terrans might have drones as companions. The Araks, which are these giant spiders, and there's a few different types of creatures of spiders, and we're excited to to start. There will be an NFT angle with the different types of spiders. But that's going to be coming out to, in the future. And in one of the faction war videos, so we did show a tamed Arrok. That was a leak. And yes, absolutely. So we see them kind of as like the buffalo, you know, for Native Americans, is that they're a respected creature, you know, albeit probably more dangerous than the buffalo were, but they are used as in sustainable and non-sustainable ways for various different parts of the free Martian life cycle. But at the same time, there are rare cases where they have become tamed and then are free. And if you have ever grown up with raising animals, you know, I've raised a bunch of animals, so then it's it doesn't always work. Some animals can be much more easily domesticated than others, and so the, you know, the likelihood of, or the value of having a domesticated Arrok is pretty remarkable. I'm not sure that I'd want to ride it though. Okay, most in question is, will we be able to repair Salim's broken cart in the future or not? Oh, I don't know. I'd have to ask some of the writers. You know, at this point, the story is really taking on a life of its own. There's a whole team of writers that have a long rope to hang themselves with. And so some of that might be bringing that cart back.
But I do want to just add that yesterday the lore team that joined us on the AMA committed to having a feature in the game where you will be able to fix Salim's broken cart. So kudos for that.
Okay.
He took it upon himself, and he took it upon himself and promised. So there you go.
Very, very nice. So do all the factions share a religion? Is everyone united under Elon, or do they each have their own? So the free Martians stopped worshiping Elon, and they, in many cases, you know, historically, when you have one god character destroyed, it's very quickly replaced with another god type character. So it's it is very reasonable to assume that that transition was part of the first civil war, or predated the first civil war, but played a large role in the first civil war, which that will come out in some backstories. And the but the rest of the anyone that's under the council influence is required, it's, you know, there's only one religion that is an official religion, and that's the worship of Elon, and he is the you know, he is the life bringer on Mars. And so there, so for hundreds of years now, anyone that has grown up on Mars, the only religion that they've been exposed to, the only books of scripture, the only vernacular of saying like Elon damn it, or you know, blessed Elon, or you know, types of praise like that, would have just come from that perspective. And we're excited to release some of that scripture in of its own, which I think people get a big kick out of. It'll be funny. Or maybe, I don't know, I just have a warped sense of humor. Okay, Samson asks, what I mean to ask through events and Discord and Malice Chasma, how has the lore progressed and canoned up to this point? Has it gone according to plan? Is it arbitrary? How much of it contributes? It is literally like herding cats. It's probably the most difficult project that I've ever been a part of, and I ran like an 84 person company as at a telecom with offices and on three different oceans. It's incredibly challenging to have multiple design teams, multiple writers, you know, people with extreme talent, extreme humility, extreme passion, extreme ego, all kind of at the same time, and to get them all to work together to create something that is that feels cohesive and feels like a world is being created, not just a collection of short stories. It's a big challenge, but I think that everybody is very aware of the challenge, and we all work together with a positive sentiment to be able to overcome this challenge. It really will be the first, if we're successful, just to take a step back, it'll be the first Star Wars, Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings style world that's ever been created through consensus, through a decentralized storytelling mechanism, which I think is pretty remarkable. And although, you know, there's been the most of the foundation for the story was laid out, you know, by key players back in the summer of 2021, to see how it has grown and how much how many people have contributed to it, and how it's really taken on a life of its own has just been a beautiful thing. Okay. I remember that Jonathan, that's me, saying that Lavana is the story of crypto. Zahava is ancient and translates to gold. That is true. Zahava means gold. It's a Semitic translation. So can we get a quick overview of what that represents so far? It's, I believe it, there's factions and there's stuff happening in and out. So the this was kind of one of the architectures of the story in of itself, is that there was a a person who was an illegal maker, meaning that they were building things that were not permissible by the council, and that that person then you know had had a daughter. That daughter was gold and was a homage to a commodity money, to a time when the power to create money. And what is money? We have to take a step back. And money is a like a condensation of work. Is that I work in a free economy, I work, and then I need to be able to store that work. So obviously I could store that work in milk from the dairy farmer, or I could store it in, you know, meat from the butcher, or in corn from the farmer. But those things are not necessarily efficient. I might not have the same time preference as the creator of those items, and their sustainability, meaning that corn is going to rot, that milk is going to go sour. You know, the same thing with the meat. That if there was a way for me to instead take my work and to not perform the barter immediately, but rather to save that or to capture that work into a type of physical form, a physical form that can't be inflated, because I don't want that I'm storing my work in a mechanism that then other people can pretend like they're storing work by simply just minting more money. So we went through initially with commodity money, and then it over the years, specifically going back to 1938 and then again in 1971, there was a drastic shift of where the world power, specifically the U.S. government and Nixon, completely dislocated the money produced by the American government, the dollar, from any type of commodity asset. So that's exactly the situation that we are in our story, and that's why there's the creation of Zahava. Is it's a reference to the fact that we had a gold, but now it has been replaced and essentially commandeered. And so what does the council do is that they literally kidnap Zahava, they take her, and then they force her to be a maker. Because a lot of the, even if you ask people conceptually as to, you know, why is crypto worthless? They say, well, it's backed by nothing. Well, why are dollars valuable? Oh, well, it's, you know, the Federal Reserve has gold in Fort Knox. There's almost this this homage or reference. There's this psychological narrative, which is I believe is still silently promoted, that dollars have value because they are backed by something. And we might not know exactly what it is. Maybe it's military might, maybe it's GDP, maybe it's gold bars in Fort Knox, but it's backed by something, so therefore it's real. And you know, they do print these pieces of paper that are green and have you know, various dead politicians on them, and so then therefore it's valuable. Now, the action of kidnapping Zahava and then is an attempt to validate the change in economic principles and to solidify the control. Because really, if I need to work in order to create money and you just need to push a button on a computer to create money, then obviously you have a significant advantage that I will never have. And so that's where also the concept of making is that the council doesn't ever actually have to work to do, to produce anything. They can like literally just push a button and then, you know, a moisturizer can appear, a spacesuit can appear, a heating unit can appear through the making process. And so this is also just an allusion to fiat currency that that when you are in power, so then creating things through a budget that you generate is easy and is painless. But so then we look at the impact that this has on the Terrans, that in order to that the children that are being used for making, that is destroying them, that they have to be kidnapped in order to do this, that they're that it results in burnouts and, you know, in comatose states. These types of things are all an allusion to the impact on society that fiat currency has. Now, the dragons, when the dragons come, so they are an allusion to cryptocurrency, that they come back and they're actually were something that had, that there's references that it's a familiar concept, dragons. Because in everybody's heart or maybe soul or collective memory, there's this concept of a commodity money. And so when the dragons come, the dragons actually take, or they redeem Zahava, the gold, from the control of the council. And then they turn it into something that it wasn't, which is a dragon rider. And the dragon rider, that really is the society that is cryptocurrency as a means of exchange, store of value. And I believe that, and it's all powered, you know, how does the dragon in the story get its power is through Luna. As I've said before, I believe that that the group that worked with the moniker Satoshi Nakamoto came to initiate a political renaissance, an economic renaissance, and I believe that that what we are doing at Terra and the relationship between Terra and UST is the ideal fulfillment of Satoshi Nakamoto's original vision, and that through it, that we will create a mechanism to hedge against inflation, to have a means of exchange that is censorship resistant, that it works on a global scale, that is environmentally friendly to operate, and it cannot be commandeered by any nation state or nefarious actor. So that's why that's kind of the relationship of Zahava being taken by her, taken and put into the place as being a maker, and then being redeemed by the dragon, and the dragon is powered by Luna. So that's the analogy and the story that we're bringing to market. And we hope that it's a story that will captivate the attention of a massive audience, and then help them realize the value drivers and the purpose of why we're here. Because there's so many people that just enter into the crypto space for Wen Moon, or you know, that they're just looking at the top five coins in the market, even though we are a top five coin now, or I don't know, the market's been pretty bloody, so maybe we've dropped down since then. I try not to check the price on a day-to-day basis, but regardless of that, the narrative is designed to be compelling. So I hope that interests you, and that you will read the book and read the comic book, and you'll share it with your loved ones, and then you'll explain to them what the analogy is underneath it. It's a modern Animal Farm or Brave New World. That's what we're going for here. Okay.
Thanks so much, Jonathan. I just wanted to remind you that there might be people here that are new to Levana, that are new to Terra, and so I think it'd be great to introduce ourselves and explain the Levana protocol in just a few sentences, so that way people that are new to the space can understand what we're doing here and what makes us different.
Sure. So Levana Protocol is a Terra-built DeFi project that focuses on narrative and gamification to educate and attract a Web2-based audience and bring them into the Terra ecosystem. And the products that are being built by the core devs and the community of Levana are focused around capital efficient markets. And the most capital efficient markets are leverage trading, specifically within the perpetual swap space. And if you've never, if you're not familiar with perpetual swaps, perpetuals are a way to gain exposure to the movement of assets, and they have advantages over traditional AMMs like Uniswap or TerraSwap or Astroport in the fact that they don't require billions of dollars worth of multiple assets being locked in pools in order for exposure to happen. Now, with AMMs, you have the problem that to trade from A to B and B to C, you either need redundancy of an A to C pool, or you need multiple swaps, which means multiple points of slippage and multiple fees collected. It also means that the only assets that can be traded on the AMM are ones that have that either natively exist on the blockchain or have been bridged or synthesized on the blockchain. So it means that you're exposed to complex mechanisms, and the more complex a mechanism is, or the more external requirements that a mechanism has, the more points of failure there are. Also, AMMs only allow you to either have spot exposure or to be out of the market. Really, you're either in UST or you're in Luna. Whereas with perpetuals, your conviction, not necessarily your budget, can determine the amount of exposure, and then thus your either reward or punishment, let's call it, when the market moves. So what I mean by that is that you could take a short position if you thought that the price of an asset was going to go down. You could take a long position, and you could even take, you could even say, I don't want just 1x exposure. I want 2x or 5x or 10x exposure. Obviously, there's more fees associated with higher exposure, and there's more risk because you do need to put up collateral, and that collateral can be wiped out. So perps are on a crypto landscape. Perps are a very interesting but yet more complicated trading mechanism or exposure or speculation mechanism. And so I think that's one of the reasons that they've really struggled to gain the same type of usage that AMMs have. Something where you just come and you say, oh, I have UST, I'll click, you know, M Tesla, and I will just purchase some of that, you know, on Mirror, Astroport, or wherever. There's a lot more decisions that you have to make. You know, how much leverage do I want? What is my liquidation price? Do I want to go long and short? Do I want to set a stop loss? It's estimated today that there are about 50,000 traders of perpetuals, and obviously that number has a high, the high boundaries of error, you know, upwards or downwards because of the anonymity or on pseudo anonymity. I don't know how to, some words I just don't know how to say out loud, because I only read them. So I apologize for that. So the fact that we don't know exactly who is who, and people can make multiple wallets, make it hard to estimate exactly how many people are trading perps. But let's just go with the number that there's 50,000 people that are trading perps. If you compare that to the the 2 million or 2 to 4 million people that are trading spot on AMMs, there's so much room to grow. So why is it that perps are not popular, even though they provide a lot of advantages over spot exchanges or swaps? Well, it's because of the complexity. It's because of the challenges and in UI and the decision-making process. So what if there was a perp that wasn't focused on competing with the other perp swaps in the market? What if there was a perp that said, you know what, we're going to have one unique focus, which our target isn't to just compete at eating the existing pie, but our target is to create a product that can capture the attention and can bring on, in a similar fashion as like a Trojan horse, let's say, millions of people from a Web2 environment. So that means that we're not trying to bring people from Solana or Ethereum into Terra, which I think is is an admirable goal. But I think that ultimately the goal is we have to think, how do we bring people in from TikTok? How do we bring people in from Facebook and from Instagram? Those are the real markets. And don't fight over the little pools. And this kind of goes back to, you know, I had a video streaming a startup called Glide Video Messaging that I created based on a patent for low latency video transfer optimized for 3G networks back from 2012. I got approved in England and US and Japan. And so we built a video streaming company off of this. And so we tried from marketing, you know, of going after our competition and saying, you know what, not a lot of, you know, there's not a lot of people that are doing streaming video from mobile to mobile. So let's go after our competitors and let's find out what they're, you know, how to communicate with them. And we're going to try and take customers from our competitors. And we found that those were actually, in the long run, some of the most challenging competitors to get, because once you optimize that funnel, then you still only had, you know, tens of thousands of people that you were going after. And then as it grew from 2012 to 2014, it was hundreds of thousands. So whoop-de-doo, hundreds of thousands. Once we switched our focus and we said, you know what, we're just going to onboard people from Facebook and from Instagram. So that's where we were able to get our first 1 million users and our second 1 million users. And we actually grew the network at its height to 26 million users. And so that's the type of scale that we envision Lavana achieving, is that how do you build a DeFi protocol that is going to have, you know, millions of users on it? So it's not, you know, going after, you know, Perpetual Finance or MTDEX or any of these other existing ones, because we know what the upper bound is there. You know, great, you're going to get your tens of, you know, at best, you're going to get your tens of thousands of speculators or traders. But if you look at what's the least amount of friction in terms of onboarding no coiners into the space, it's through the form of entertainment. It's through NFTs. If you look at OpenSea's growth over the last 2 years, and I met Devin back in 2018, when he was like raising his, I think his first $2 million. And it was just him and his partner, and like a genius, I passed on that. Because I didn't see the defensibility, or the, you know, it seemed like a commodity of a marketplace. But the, just looking at the massive amount of growth in the NFT space, and even with, you know, a pullback, and there's always going to be pullbacks in this type of industry. You know, the market gets ahead of itself and then it scales back, and then it gets ahead of itself and it scales back. But each time it's higher lows and higher highs. And that's how you know that we're in an emerging market. And so what Lavana wants to be is a premier blue chip NFT on the Terra ecosystem, and to use that attention, because we anticipate that in 2 years, the NFT market on Terra is going to be 100 times as many participants as the DeFi market. And that's just a consequence of the fact that most people are going to come into crypto through entertainment and collectibles. And so that's where we want to be. So our user acquisition funnel is designed, and it's a bit confusing. And I you know, I take a lot of responsibility for that. You know, sometimes my brain is all over the place, and when we do, you know, we are working on so many different projects at the same time. But in terms of what we've done to date, is we released the largest NFT drop in terms of number of participants. We had 6,300 participants of a novel reverse auction donation method to fund our first DeFi protocol. So people donated into the pool zero of our leverage index tokens in order to receive these meteors, which was the opening of the story of Lavana. Also got them emotionally invested into reading about the lore and learning about the lore. Then we released a concept of evolutionary NFTs, where these These meteors then were cracked open and then revealed either dragon eggs or revealed magic dust. The magic dust could be used for crafting or for upgrading your dragon egg. And then the dragon eggs could be nested and then soon will be hatched. And by soon, I mean within the next 1 to 2 months. You know, we have almost all of the dragons, but we're not going to launch until every single dragon is ready. And that, I think, just makes it more fun and more fair. You know, we didn't want to have favoritism of different qualities of dragons. And the dragons, as Beach said, have a lot of variety. You can choose some of the aspects of the dragons. And then along those lines, we've created the first play to earn games within the Terra space, which were these a series of mini games. I think we've got 7 of them that are out so far. We've distributed rewards to, I forget exactly how many players, but tens of thousands of rewards have been distributed in the forms of free NFTs to players that participated in the games. We created the Faction Wars. We invited other NFT communities. The Faction Wars was the first multiplayer play to earn game released on Terra, which is happening now, which will be culminating at a trading war competition of our perps on testnet. We created the first NFT game on testnet to help educate people in preparations for our perpetual swap testnet game. So we didn't want that to be the first testnet experience that people had. So we created a series of games to educate you how to get onto testnet. And, you know, we had thousands of lunatics participate. And then ultimately our vision is to produce produce a large scale game, which will be inspired by some of the classics. It'll be playable on mobile. So things like Age of Empires, StarCraft, Heroes of Might and Magic, Settlers of Catan, even like Stratego, to be able to create a game where within that game, similar to DeFi Kingdom, how you can access a fork of Uniswap within DeFi Kingdom, and that's their main form of DeFi. So we envision a world-based game with tradable assets, with land that can be bought, sold, conquered, defended, and that that certain areas of the game will have direct access to DeFi. So the onboarding experience is to create something that is palatable to market to a Web2 audience that then can onboard people into a play-to-earn gaming experience. And then that gaming experience is not a goal in of itself. It's not to just try to get people to race horses or, you know, to, I don't know what, to breed monsters. The goal of bringing people onto this this GameFi experience is to be the first introduction to Anchor, to Mars, to Astroport, to White Whale, and to our, you know, let's call it our magnum opus, which is perpetual swaps. So that, in a nutshell, is Lavana. And in terms of the narrative, which I went through at length, it will be expressed in the form of a written trilogy aimed at targeted at young adult. We have a female protagonist, so we want to be able to bring more women into the ecosystem. And it'll be a trilogy of novels. It will be a collection of comic books. It will be memorabilia and swag. We've already produced hoodies and we've got 3D printing that's on its way, and various other things. There will be merch like any good world needs to have. And then ultimately, my goal is a mini series, 220 minutes of animated content, and then a live action movie. If I could wave a magic wand, I would say, directed by or produced by J.J. Abrams, who produced a lot of the large epic films that we have today. So that's the vision of Lavana in a nutshell.
Thanks for that. I do want to bring up a question that was just posted in the general chat about the perpetual swaps, which we've seen a few times. And then I think we'll head over to the quiz, which is going to happen in the Discord channel. So if you're not yet a member of the Levana Discord, jump over to Discord and join us, because the quiz and the prizes will happen over there. So Gate 7 wrote, I understand some people have expressed concerns that the Levana Perpetual Testnet does not have certain key features investors would want to see, like setting stop losses, etc. And I also understand that we want it to be simple for grandma. Have you considered a switch feature where you could switch between Levana and Levana Pro? So you can cater for both, minimum and dad investors and also professionals.
Yes, absolutely. Stop losses. Look, I take full, it's a tightrope to walk. So absolutely. Personally, I need stop losses to trade with any type of volume and sleep at night. So yes, that is something that we know needs to be added to the product. We didn't want to delay the beta, until that was live. But yes, there will be the features that are needed by the community in order to have in order to be able to attract professional traders. They will be added. You know, we've got a comprehensive dev team that comes with a lot of experience of finance. You know, some that have been building. Building trading desks, literally predating the internet. Those things will come. And what's important for us is to hear your feedback. You know, that's why we wanted the MVP, which stands for minimal viable product, to come out strong. And I think that we've done that with an emphasis on minimal. You know, I'm looking here and we see that the market is predominantly, my shorts made a killing. I know that we're not allowed to talk about shorts here in Luna, but on Testnet I put up a lot of shorts and I'm up a crazy amount. But I was just trying to be the contrarian. I'm actually not bearish, and I think that every day is a good day to buy Luna, not financial advice. It's important for us to get your feedback. We put the help button on the bottom right. So that is a great place to put your requests. That goes straight to the devs. And then our goal is for the foreseeable future to just constantly grind on innovate on new features, innovation based on the prioritization of customer feedback. So it really is, it's a focus that I think is somewhat different. And we have a cadence of delivery that's somewhat different than other projects in the space. And I think that just comes from so many people that are working or associated with the project in one way or another. And as I said before, like my role is comms. I'm head of comms, which is the best role because it means I don't really need to tell anybody what to do. I don't need to do the building or the QA. I guess I do some of the QA, but I get to come on these types of spaces and just talk about all the hard work that other people do. So the way that we are going to know what features to add and is going to come from you and the experience that you might have seen if you've been watching Levana over the last 6 months is that we ship. You know, it's like if you look at today products within the space, within the DeFi space or dApps, and how they have changed over the last 12 months or 18 months, in most cases it's very minuscule. It might be like a few features here or there. But a lot of these teams, unfortunately, from what I've seen as just being an investor in the space, is that they build, they get over the initial hump, they have some type of token generation event, and then they essentially bounce, and then they go to work on another project. Because it really is, just like how as a liquidity provider or as a, as a farmer, it's far more lucrative to be at the sunrise of a project, those first couple months, that's really when you make most of your gains. So it's the same thing with developers, is that they tend they'll make their largest bags helping start a project, and then they jump and they bounce to another project. So one of the, there is no fireproof or bulletproof way to prevent that, but we have harnessed a culture of a sustainability within the Livana community, or within the core dev community. And I think that sense of sustainability of everybody around the table saying, this is a 7-year project. And what part of the interview process is, are you prepared to be around here for 7 years? Now, obviously, 7 years is forever in crypto, and who knows where we'll be there, between now and then. But our commitment to the project is that we want to make it better, and to make it better for the users that are actually using the product. So that's I hope that answers the question there, and I hope that inspires you to actually tap that help button and to help us make the product better in whatever way you can. And it seems that, I mean, I'm just looking here now, we've got over $18 million dollars traded. The volume for the past 24 hours is $18 million on testnet, which is, I mean, I was wrong. I was totally wrong as to how many people would use this product on testnet and would be beta testers. But it's just been amazing. I didn't think that we were going to break a million. I mean, it's hard to get testnet UST. You have to like get 5 Luna from the tap, and then you have to trade it on TerraSwap. So not an easy task. So where did this, even assuming that this trading volume is 10x leverage. So that means that the actual underlying collateral is only around, 2 million. So where are you guys getting 2 million testnet UST? I'd like some of that, but sorry, I digress. Peach, what's the next question?
So the next question is, we are going to be running a quiz for prizes, for real world NFT prizes on our Discord. So if you're not yet a member of our Discord, jump on over, verify yourself and Lunar Link. So I want to give everyone a few minutes to do that, because in order to win, you do need to be on the Discord and be Lunar Linked and be a member of a faction. So we'll be running the quiz within the live AMA message board chat. So what happens is, we're going to ask a question here, and then the first person that writes the correct answer on the live AMA message board chat is going to win the first rare meteor. And then whatever faction they are in, then the members of that faction cannot win again. And so then we'll go with the other three factions, and until we get to all four factions have won one rare meteor, and then we'll go to the ancient dust. So there'll be one rare meteor and one ancient dust for a member of each of the factions that they'll be able to win. And again, I just want to give everyone a minute or two until they jump into the Discord and get started. If you don't have a faction NFT, then unfortunately you're not eligible to win in this competition. You do need to be a member of a faction. If I'm not mistaken, the talismans are 0.1 Luna right now on the secondary market. So you do need to have a talisman and be staked to a faction. All right. So again, I'm going to give everyone 30 seconds. I think there was maybe one more question we can answer. And we also have with us the Livana lore team has joined us here on Twitter. So I just wanted to welcome them. Maybe, Jonathan, you can allow them to speak. Hang on a second. You can invite them to be a speaker. I'm just trying to see where the lore team is. Maybe if you can just send me your Twitter handle. I don't know what your Twitter handle is.
A lot of people on here. Right.
Send us your Twitter handle and we'll let you in. So again, I'm just giving everyone another minute to join the Discord. There was a question from Zachary about what does each faction value? And I just wanted to fight back a little bit. The Terrans, he thought it was Terrans is financial motivation. The Guardians was honor, physical power. The Council was order, psychological power. And the Free Martians were religious zealots. So I don't think that that's totally accurate, Zachary. Definitely not religious zealots in terms of the Free Martians. We value freedom above all else. So, and I'm not really sure that the other assessments there were totally accurate.
I don't know. I would go so far as to say is everybody is a religious zealot. Some people's religion is not to eat margarine. You know, some people's is, some of it is like, you know, some of it is like, I worship Dogecoin. Like we all have our idols, you know? So it's whether it's a dragon or whatever it is, I don't know. I think that it's baked. I think obsession, let's just call it that, is a natural human sentiment and then feature. And then it's also something that is amplified through society, that when society tells you to worship musicians or singers or politicians, it becomes something that's just an overwhelming feeling. And even though it might not have the same rituals that what we would call today religion, I think it's an equal form of zealotry, zealotness, zealotism, whatever that word is.
Okay, fair enough. You've attacked my hate of margarine. I love that. That's fine.
You don't like margarine? What?
All right. If you're listening, I never make cookies with margarine, and neither should anyone else. Beach Dragon cookies do not come with margarine. All right. There was one other question that I did want to answer about the NFTs. After the dragon hatches, will the baby dragon NFT be animated? You love how the talismans spin. That was from Saberstein. So thank you for that question. So immediately after hatch, no, the baby dragons will not be animated. I cannot tell you how much work is involved in just creating these 3D baby dragons with all the genetic modifications that are coming. I'm not going to speak about the future, but immediately after hatch, the baby dragons are not animated. And we also love how the talismans spin. And if you haven't had a chance, you should check out the hero medals that were also minted. I think they're incredible also. So, you know, we obviously are moving in that direction, and we recognize where the world is going. But immediately after hatch, they will be the 3D baby dragons that you've seen so far in the sneak peeks and on the channel. So hopefully by now everyone's had a chance to jump into our Discord channel. And so I want to open up the quiz and respect people's time because I realize that we're already over. Look, I have supporters. Margarine is plastic. Yes. Okay. Oh, they're obviously free Martians. So All right. So again, for those of you that haven't found it yet, in the voice chat, sort of like heading on Discord, there is a channel called Live AMA Messaging. So what's going to happen is I'm going to ask the question here. You're going to put in your answer into the Live AMA message chat. And then depending on which faction you're in, then the rest of the factions will be able to win the next one. Okay, so here we go with the first question. All right, so this is for a rare meteor. All right, is everyone ready? Question number one, why does Zahava recognize the spacesuit in the mural in the caves of Minarot? Why does Zahava recognize the spacesuit in the mural in the caves of Minarot? All right. Wow. Ams, the Terran Ams. This is the second time. You are killing it. All right, Ams, congratulations. You have won yourself a rare meteor. I think you also won one 12 hours ago. All right, so that means Ams is a Terran, which means that the Terrans are excluded from the next three questions. You can obviously answer, but you won't be able to win anything. So free Martians, Council, and Guardians, you got to show your stuff now. All right, next question. What materials from the Minarot cave comprise Zahava's spacesuit? What materials from the Minarot cave comprise Zahava's spacesuit? Wait, I think we have the correct answer. Hold on a second. Well, we have the correct answer, but it's a Terran. So again, free Martians, council members, cotton polyblend. That's awesome. And Guardians. Come on, guys. Margarine? Yeah, okay. I would give you a rare meteor if I had one to give you for that. Oh, okay. I think we have an answer from Father. Hang on a second. I think we've got the right answer from Father. I'm just checking that nobody else posted that before you. If anyone sees that somebody else posted before Father, the correct answer that wasn't a Terran, Yeah. Okay. Unless I got this wrong, Father, congratulations. Father the Guardian, congratulations. You have won. You have won the next rare meteor. So what happens is if you've won, DM myself or Dragonism, and we will sort you out and send your winnings to your wallet. All right. So that means a Terran and a Guardian have won, which means the Council and the Free Martians. This is up to you guys. All right. We have two more questions left from rare meteors, and then we'll move to ancient dust. So question number three, what does the Sage of the Free Martians, Ima, have hanging from the ceiling in her hut? What does the Sage of the Free Martians, Ima, have hanging from the ceiling in her hut? All right. Hang on. Wait. It's moving too fast. Okay. I believe that AC Clutch, this is yours. I'm just checking to make sure that you were the first person. AC Clutch, you are a Free Martian. And yes, I believe it's yours. Congratulations. You have won a rare meteor. Make sure to DM us so we can get you your prize. All right. So the last one, if we've had a Free Martian, we have had a Terran, and we have had a Guardian, which means council members. Oh my gosh, you guys do this every time. Council members, read the lore. It's like you don't know your own history. All right, fourth question. This is only if you're a council member. Here we go. Why does Salim need to step in and save Zahava's life? Why does Salim need to step in and save Zahava's life? All right, here we go. You know your own history. You wrote it. Apparently, you don't know your own history.
Guys, all right, don't feel bad if you don't know the answers to these. I listen to these questions and I'm like, no, that's what are you talking about? There's no answer to that. That's impossible. Like, you know, I wrote that story. Oh, wait. I guess, yeah, that line does answer this. Gosh, how many times have you guys read this? Seriously.
All right. Hang on a second. I believe that we have an answer. Hang on a second. I believe I think I'm going with Council Battle. Unless somebody tells me that there's somebody else here that got it first. I believe it's Council Battle. Yes, the Free Martian Rangers were about to kill her. So Council Battle, congratulations. You have run yourself the fourth rare meteor. All right, now we're going to move to Ancient Dust. So again, Council Battle, DM myself or Dragonism, and we will sort you out with your prize. All right, great job, everyone. All right, so there's. I just want to answer two more questions that I saw about the NFTs here before we go into the rare meteor quiz, actually. Somebody was asking if they can stake multiple talismans in their wallet, and the answer is no. You can stake one talisman per wallet. Now, somebody else was asking if zero SL dust is valid. So the answer is absolutely. Zero spirit level dust is absolutely valid, and you can use it to... you can use it to nest an egg. You can use it to do genetic modifications, and you can even use it to hatch. The only thing that will happen is that it won't add spirit level because it doesn't have any spirit level. So it won't add any spirit level to your dragon, but it allows you to complete any task that spirit level dust would also be able to do, except for add spirit level, obviously. And finally, why buy a nested egg versus a non-nested egg? So that's really a personal choice. You know, a nested egg has already evolved and you can see the spirit level and it's displayed. A non-nested egg, you would need the appropriate dust and then you would need to go through the nesting process. So if you, you know, like scratch off lottery tickets and you want to find out what the talisman is that's given with your nested egg and you want a member talisman, you haven't gotten one yet, then you can definitely nest your own egg, you know, get a non-nested egg, get the corresponding dust, nest it, and then find out which member talisman that you'll get. Again, there's only ever going to be 8,888 member talisman because each of the dragons produces one of those. So versus buying a nested already egg, which means somebody else nested it, they got the member talisman, and now you can just move forward with your nested egg, genetically modify it, and hatch a baby dragon. So it's really up to you. It just depends on, you know, at which stage you want to join the project. So here we go with the final four questions. All right, so this is for Ancient Dust. So again, it's open to all factions at this point. And as people from different factions answer, we'll exclude the people. So that way one member of every faction will win. All right, here we go. question number one from section two. This is for a quarter of the ancient dust. Where does Ahava wake up after her crash landing with Lavanna? Where does Ahava wake up after her crash landing with Lavanna? Okay, so apparently, wow, Ams, you are cleaning up, man. All right, the Terrans, you are out, because Ams, whoever that community member is, has this entire lore memorized. Yes, the answer is she was in a cart. So nice job. So Ams, the Terrans are out now for the rest, and you have cleaned up. Congratulations. Contact us for all of your winnings. All right, next question. Is everyone ready? Hopefully. Where does Ahava sit when riding Lavanna? Where does Ahava sit when riding Lavanna? All right. I believe that we have the first answer from Miss Slinky the Guardian. Hang on a second. Good job, Miss Slinky the Guardian. Congratulations. The Guardians are now out. So this, the last two questions and the last two ancient dusts are available to the Council and the Free Martians. All right. Congratulations, Miss Slinky. Nice job. All right, here we go. Question number three. Everyone ready? Clear your mind. All right. How did the council attempt to capture Lavanna, the dragon? How did the council attempt to capture Lavanna, the dragon? Again, you have to be either a free Martian or a council member to get this. All right, I think we have our first answer. I think we have our first correct answer from a council member. Hang on a second. All right. We were looking for electrified ropes and harnesses. There was an electric rope, but unfortunately you're a Terran, so I can't give it to you. But we do have Plutus. Plutus, the council member. Congratulations. You have redeemed the council. You guys didn't come in last place in every single one of these quizzes. You've now redeemed yourself with the very last one. So Plutus, congratulations. Again, DM myself for Dragonism to collect your prize of your ancient dust. And the last one is for the Free Martians. Come on, Free Martians. Don't let me down here. All right. Here we go. How much longer is a day on Mars than on ancient Terra? How much longer is a day on Mars than on ancient Terra? All right, you must be a free Martian. And all right, here we go. All right, Casca, the free Martian. I think this is yours. Yes. Casca, the free Martian, congratulations. You have just won yourself ancient dust. All right, everybody, this was super fun. I'm glad that you joined us. I'm just going to check in the AMA question channel to see if there's anything else that wasn't answered yet.
Well, I do want to talk. We did talk about the Lavanna lore quiz. We talked about we're doing an AMA. We haven't touched on the token launch. So I do want to.
We haven't touched on the token launch. There. Okay. And somebody was asking about land. So, can we talk about land ownership and.
Sure.
Land ownership and rental.
Sure. We're currently in the design phase for, and, initially we thought that the design would be finished by now, but there's been so much positive feedback, or there's been so much contribution and concepts that have come through this process that, our expectations and our ambitions have grown, which also has increased the complexity of the game that we're designing, and we're looking forward to over the next roughly month to release an outline of the game and the game mechanics to explain how it will work. It's going to be very much inspired by a lot of the classic mobile games that we play, which themselves were inspired by, the giants from the late 90s, the games that I played growing up. Land will be a producing asset, and dragons will be a producing asset. That means that if you own land in the game and you you have dragons that then are on that land or are based in that land, so then those will create new asset that they will earn. So they will have the they will earn from other people in a play to earn or in a peer to peer earning mechanism, and then they also will earn in terms of emissions of new assets or consumable assets within the game itself, and so the land will be distributed in a mechanism similar to the meteor shower. It's not going to be a meteor shower because that's nonsensical. Land doesn't fall from the sky. But in the form that it will take place over the course of a time period, there will be periodic times where you will be able to, where land will be essentially auctioned off. Different land will have different attributes, and there will be some amount of randomness involved and some amount of determinism or deterministic nature to the distribution. Those were the core mechanisms of the meteor shower, which to date has still been the most successful NFT launch on Terra. And so we're adapting that to distribute the game board. Any funds that are collected, and there will be ways to get land for free. Don't worry about that. If you've been participating in some of the games, you'll be able to do things like look at your PDA and see information about land at some point. But for people that are just getting involved now, or people that want more than just one parcel of land, there will be those options through the distribution mechanism that I described. Now, we recognize that it's very important for this whole industry that there's scholarship programs, meaning that there's the ability to take assets that you own, which are working assets or assets that can produce other assets, to take them and be able to essentially either rent them out to others that can then use them to perform in-game actions to optimize their yield, which then creates just passive income for the owner that rented it out, or even to hire master landowners and then share some of those share what they reap with the workers of the land and the riders of the dragons. So those are the two areas of those are the two economic principles that we're really excited to see come out in a multiplayer Terra-based game that will take place on Mars. And the land distribution is planned for after the token launch. Now, in terms of the token launch, it's very much based off of, we're a Delphi Labs organization. So we will be using the same, a very similar launch mechanism to what Mars and Astroport used. So it's a three part. The total amount of tokens will be a billion tokens, the same as Mars and Astroport. There will be 10 million tokens distributed through airdrops. It will be less focused on the general, Luna community, and more focused on the people that have been around the table actually playing our games and interacting with our assets. And that will come with a 10 million token airdrop. And as we've said before, there is a huge chunk of that 10 million, which will be allocated to participants in the faction war. So if you haven't been playing, you haven't been testing the, you're not planning on testing Perp Swap in the trading competition or playing Malus Chasma, which is essentially a training for on-chain governance. Each person has certain voting power. There's different types of groups with different ideologies. And then how do they work together to create consensus? So that's the analogy really within Malus Chasma, which is the current game that is live today. So the token, there will be 70 million of the billion tokens that will be that will be released, that will be minted or distributed upon the token generation event. And so 10 million of that is earmarked for airdrops. There is 35 million that is for that's for a lock drop. So there will be a lock drop of UST, similar to the Mars's lock drop. You know, we've made some adjustments because what we saw with Mars was that the participants in the lock drop, they got their tokens immediately, which meant that they could use the liquidity in the LBA, which was, you know, phase three, in order to have just immediate exit liquidity. So, you know, working with the guys at Delphi, you know, we've come up with an alternative approach where nobody gets tokens, just nobody gets like a big bag of tokens immediately, where they will be trickled out over time, over the course of either 0 to 100 days or 100 to 200 days. And so that distribution will depend how far down of the commitment that you go. Is do you take the tokens that you got from your airdrop or from your lock drop and do you deposit them into the LBA? Do you take those rewards and then put them further into the governance portal or into the risk fund? And the risk fund, if you're not familiar with it, is the mechanism with which it's similar to providing liquidity in an AMM. You know, you need something to trade against. So while in a perps, we don't need all of these different type of assets just sitting there. Rather, there can be just UST. So it means it's more capital efficient because you can, a risk pool could provide a risk adjustment or a backstop or confidence in terms of payout, depending upon how you look at it, for multiple different types of asset sets or multiple different markets within the same platform. So there, again, it's, you know, perps are just an incredibly capital efficient. And that's one of the things that attracts me to them. So the token emissions will happen over the course of roughly 4 years. But we are optimistic that the platform, that everything that is being created by all of the contributors to Lavana, that it will end up actually being profitable, and that because without profitability, you can't create sustainability. So there needs to be a strong drive and push to creating a sustainable network so that the motivation for providing this liquidity or for participating or for playing the game and like the loss leaders for new participants doesn't just have a cliff where, okay, it's all fun and games until you run out of tokens and then everything just falls apart. So that's kind of the methodology that we're looking at. So there will be I know it's very hard on the spaces to kind of understand how these numbers break down, but there will be a very comprehensive blog post. Please God, will be out by the end of this week. You know, it was originally scheduled for the end of last week, but that didn't happen. But we will hopefully get it out by the end of this week. And then based on, in terms of the path to launch for perps, so the way that we see it is right now we're in beta. It's being used by hundreds of people. You know, there's tens of millions of UST that have been traded on it, even just over the last 2 days. Then we will have, get the audit report back from Oak Security, and that will probably have some bugs and some requests for fixes. And so then that will initiate another dev cycle to fix those bugs. And then it really just is about the protocol is ready to launch to a limited extent. You know, we won't have a big risk fund, so there will be limits as to the amount of positions and the amount of, you know, the size of the positions that can be taken on. But it would technically be ready to go straight to mainnet. After that, we will announce the airdrop, and then the lock drop, and then the liquidity bootstrapping. The funds collected from the lock drop will then go into the risk pool, the funds collected from the LBA, the liquidity bootstrapping, will then go into Astroport, and then the token will be, then the DeFi product will be live. After that, we'll be launching a much simpler product, which is Luna2X LLI, which is a Luna Lavana leverage index tokens. That we decided to put that to launch that after the perps, because the perps need the lock drop really in order to be successful, or not to be successful, but in order to start out running as opposed to start out walking. Whereas the liquidity for Luna2X, was already donated to the project, at least the initial liquidity from the meteor shower back in November. But that's also LLI is passed. We completed the audit for that, and so pretty much ready to just push that out the door. So it's all happening pretty quickly. So if I was going to look at a calendar, I would say that our goal is within the next let's say roughly 2 months to have all of this in production. Now, obviously, you know, the devil is in the details, and it takes time and polish, and we are deathly afraid of hacks and bad practices and just in general losing anybody's money, because that's never a great thing to do. So because of that, we're not in a rush to do anything. You only get to launch once. We've spoken to the community on Discord. We run polls on this, and if we have to delay things because of you either security reasons or UI UX reasons, then that's the choice that we will make. And then along that same time frame, that's when the hatching will occur. So we're still undecided as to whether to do the hatching, right before the perps goes live or right after the perps goes live. Some of that will just be determined by the workflow and the amount of labor. But it's exciting. It's taken us a long time to get here. I was first introduced to Lavana over a year and a half ago. I really fell in love with the project, and it needed, one of the things that I didn't like was the lack of comms, as a dedicated role in most DeFi projects. So I was very grateful to have the opportunity to play this role and to be able to be the voice and the sounding board. And our DMs are always open. It's very easy to get in touch with the core devs, to get in touch with the mods or myself or Beach, or some of the other, dedicated personnel in the project. Because still at this point, we still are about half volunteers. Half of the people that are around the table are just volunteering, part time for it while they moonlight from their Web2 jobs. So at this point, I'm rambling, so I apologize, but I hope that was a sufficient taster as to the token economics and the distribution method. And as I said before, it's best to read the blog post when it comes out and to give feedback on it. We're excited to push this baby bird out of the nest and let it fly.
Baby dragon.
Yes. It's baby dragon.
Awesome. So I just want to remind everybody that the perpetual swaps is up on testnet right now, and we encourage you to hop on over and try it out. There will be a trading war, which will be added, is the last essential battle of the faction wars. So that's at beta.lavana.exchange. So again, it's on testnet. Just make sure that you have UST funds. You can go to the Terra Faucet and get testnet funds. And we know, unfortunately, that they do come in 5 Luna increments, but you can get those and then swap them on TerraSwap. in testnet and turn them into UST. So make sure that you have UST. We had a community member that apparently made $40,000 in testnet. So I'm sorry, taking some sweet short positions yesterday. So I'm sorry, that's only on testnet, but it's really fun to play and see how, you know, and see how this all works and get ready for the trading wars, because you and your faction can obviously benefit from learning how to trade perpetual swaps on beta.lavana.exchange. And in addition to that, we are in the second battle of Malus Chasma. So I believe that we're on skirmish two, and there are 26 more to go. So there are huge points up for grabs, and it can change and shift really the entire results of the war. So make sure to fight for your faction. There are two airstrikes per per player this time, and additional points, as well as some UI additions that make it more fun to play. And there will be surprises throughout this week. So it's going on for 7 days. It'll last until next Sunday. I think that's about it. We want to just thank you all for joining us. We hope you had fun. Congratulations to all the winners. And we will see you for the next AMA. Thanks, everyone. Have a great rest of your day or evening.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was the Lavana Lore Quiz AMA, recorded on Sunday, April 10th, 2022. This episode of The Ether was brought to you by Orbital Command, a community validator on Terra dedicated to educating, expanding, and promoting the Lunatic community. Visit OC's What We Do page using the link in the show notes to take advantage of some of their other educational resources, including weekly meetups to discuss Terra protocols, strategies, and concepts, the Terra Luna Intel Report on Telegram, and YouTube explainer videos on Terra concepts. You can also support their community efforts by considering them next time you're delegating or redelegating your Luna. Find out more at orbitalcommand.io. This episode of The Ether was also brought to you by Luart. Luart is the first gamified NFT platform built on the Terra network. Luart provides a seamless minting and trading experience, all while earning you rewards just for being a user. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the community in the Discord server for the most up-to-date news and announcements regarding all the hot new NFT launches, platform upgrades, and new projects hitting the secondary marketplace. Are you ready to put your helmet on and join the movement? Find out more at luart.io. Terra Spaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. Waking up like a basement dweller, stepped out the door and heard racists yelling. 2020, what an ugly shit show. Staring at the fucking Rickroll from the get-go. Looking outside, the whole state's on fire. The fuck do you expect when you embrace the liars and replace the writers with AI just like us? Emaciated models killing bright birds. First in, last out, picture me rolling. The worst time to cash out, so what you holding? The Merc's gonna cash cow, country stolen. Drooling over chicken like the goose is golden. Trying to be soulful, spitting that molten lava from the bottom of the caldera. I'm hot and gonna put it in a bottle and offer it to the god who hit the gas full throttle, blasting off in a rocket.
The many people who will see things happen to them that are in their favor. So someone's looking over me. That's a fascinating phenomenon when that happens. And when you analyze those situations, what you find is that we as humans simply have a profound inability to understand statistics and probability.
Stitching these writings, living that life like, who would have guessed you turn out this nice, right? Avoiding stress, that's the motherfucking secret. Print that shit on a motherfucking leaflet. I'm just an asshole hooked on the bricks. Looking at the rectangles, damn, they kinda thick. We've gone through a whole lot of kings here. Cutting off heads just to bring cheer. Getting all fired up, Tiger King, line them up. When you'd give an arm and a leg just to try the junk on some first time buyer's luck. Alexa, set a reminder and remind me to buy a bunch. And put your hands up if you fuck this year. And keep them in the air if you're picking up the spare. And put your mask on just to go outside. Looking at the planet about to downsize.
So climate change will not make Earth I live in New York City, where in our harbor we have the Statue of Liberty. If you melt the water ice that's on land, the ocean level will rise to reach her left elbow. That takes out all of New York City. And basically every other coastal city that we've spent thousands of years building since the dawn of civilization.